animal. 70, so 70 biologist.
Animalist.
I didn't say that. There you go. Call me hour. Okay, I'd like to call the House Finance meeting in order. Today is January 18th, 2012. And the time is 1:35. Members present, Representative Jewell, Representative Wilson, Representative Vera. Oh boy. And Representative Frontier, Co-Chair Schultz, Representative Dugan, welcome. Representative Adrian and Representative Costello. Representative Dugan is excused. We do have a quorum. Welcome everybody back. Let's see if there's any. I see some new faces in the audience. I see the new staff. There's something going on out there. But today we're going to hear from the OB director, Karen Rayfeld, giving us the overview of the governor's budget for introduced this yesterday in fiscal year 2000. Before it's rudely interrupted, the 2013 fiscal budget. Before we get to Karen, I would like to know.
I actually thought that was a sort of charged presentation I'd ever made with the meeting being over.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Co-Chair Stoltz, members of the committee, my name is Karen Rayfeld. I'm the Director of the Office of Management and Budget. With me today is John Badger. John, I think, is familiar to all of you. He's our senior economist at OMB. I do have the new Chief Budget Analyst, Kelly O'Sullivan, is sitting in the front row there, and Mr. Tyson Gallagher, who is our capital budget coordinator. I did include in your packet for the hearing a list of all of our staff and their assignments and their contact information. And of course, please feel free to contact any of us if you have questions. We're here to help you sort your way through this budget, and we'll help you in any way we possibly can. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to talk about and present an overview of the governor's FY13 budget request. From my perspective, approving the annual operating capital budget for the state of Alaska is one of the most important things that you do, if not the most important thing that you do during the legislative session, and I appreciate your intention and the time that you will devote to this task. In bringing this budget before you, the administration spends months working on it. We work with all of our agencies, the University of Alaska, we go through their their requests, their challenges, and trying to meet their most pressing needs while still holding on our state government spending. We do that by focusing on our priorities and also by focusing on results. When Governor Parnell released the budget in December, he framed the discussion around results, and I applaud your efforts over this interim to really redesign your budget subcommittee process to include that discussion with state agencies about their mission, their core services, and how well they are doing for Alaskans. It's an important discussion to be accountable for the public dollars you spend and to be able to communicate what the state's receiving for the investment that we're making. It also needs to be a meaningful tool for our agencies and for the program managers so that they can link the budget to the results and provide targets and strategies for continuous improvement in service delivery. So as we go through this process, I think it's very important, and I'm very pleased to see your focus on that. We have quite a list of agency personnel who are enthusiastic about attending your training on Saturday and spending more time with you on this topic, so thank you for that. Yesterday, as you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, there were three budget bills introduced, and also the port geo bond package. We'll be talking about those throughout the presentation. Governor Brown's vision for economic growth and strengthening families have been his overarching way to communicate with Alaskans and his priorities. Alaska's future rests on responsibly developing our natural resources and creating jobs and economic opportunity for families. This budget supports the governor's vision in several key priority areas. In developing the budget, the governor has consistently used these guiding principles: fiscal restraint, to spend less and save more for the future; make strategic investments, invest in our infrastructure to grow Alaska's economy; build our cash reserves, but declining oil production will lead to allowing cash reserves to provide state services over time. At the end of the last calendar year, we had nearly $13 million in the constitutional budget reserve and the statutory budget reserve. And then to continue to focus on results, those agency missions, core services, and priorities. The governor's budget priorities support that investment strategy and are based on our constitutional priorities: resource development, creating jobs for Alaskans; education, preparing our students for success in college or post-secondary education; transportation and infrastructure to support economic development; public safety for our homes and families; and to strengthen our military missions and support military families. When we look at the revised fall forecast for FY 12 and 13, this particular chart shows the proposed, or the projected revenue, the proposed spending plan, and the projected balances at the end of each fiscal year. As you know, the fall forecast was revised upward. 90% of Alaska's unrestricted general fund comes from oil production. We know that oil production continues to decline faster than originally was forecast. And high oil prices tend to mask the effect of that decline, but it also provides the opportunity for us to save. When you look at the chart on slide 5, you'll see that in FY 12, the revenue is projected to be $8,981,000,000. With a projected spending of just over $7 million. That would leave a projected balance of over $1.9 million at the end of fiscal year 2012. In FY 13, we see projected revenue of $8.2 million and the governor's proposed spending plan of $6.4 million, with a projected balance at the end of the fiscal year of nearly $1.8 million. So together, between fiscal year 12 and fiscal 13 surplus, you have the opportunity to save roughly $3.7 billion. Slide 6 is a high-level snapshot of the total budget request before you, $12.1 billion, and we're breaking out in this slide the sources of funds for the proposed budget. The unrestricted general fund is $6.4 billion, or roughly 53% of the total request in front of you. Federal funds represent 24% of the total budget at $2.87 billion. Permanent funds, 1.48, is about 12%, and this is the money we put aside for dividends and inflation proofing. Designated general funds, $834.5 million, or 7% of the total budget. Designated general funds, just to give you an example of what's included in that category, would be university receipts, about $340 million are designated general funds. General fund program receipts, about $114 million, are also a type of designated general fund. And a smaller example would be renewable energy fund grants come from designated general funds. And finally, other funds, about $505 million, is 4% of our total requested budget. The types of revenue in that particular category would be permanent fund receipts. Permanent fund receipts are about $126 million are used for the permanent fund corporation operations and management fees. Then we also have international airport funds at about $110 million. Statutory designated program receipts, and then some other smaller funding sources. So that just is a snapshot of the fund sources for the proposed budget in front of you. I'd like to go through, Mr. Chairman, and just highlight some of the specific requests under each one of the priority areas that the governor has put forward in his budget. Many of these, I know that you've read about since the governor released the budget in December. I just again did capture this here for the record today. Resource development, positioning our economy for growth. The governor's proposed budget includes $28.5 million for roads to resources. This continues our work on the Umiak Foothills West Road. It's an industrial road and included $10 million for the environmental work on that project. $10 million for a road to Tanagra. $4 million to continue the work on the road to the Gambler Mining District in Northwest Alaska. And $4.5 million for the Klondike Industrial Use Highway that goes from Skagit to the Yukon and the mining district there, along with other roads to resources. We included $3.3 million under the Department of Natural Resources through their permitting application process. Continuing our assessment of strategic minerals and rare earth elements at $2.7 million, and also an assessment of our shale oil at $1.1 million. Now, highlighted on the slide, but just to mention, we also have included in the budget $2.7 million in general funds for a statewide digital mapping initiative, hoping to capture another $12 to $13 million in federal funds to support that project. That elevation data is very important to not only our resource development, but also to aviation safety, routes for roads, emergency response, all types of activities. So it's a very important project.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Karen, just two questions on the roads to resources. So they're doing exploration wells on Umiata, I think, this winter, maybe next winter. Can you explain to me, I may be missing something, but can you explain to me why we'd be spending money on a road to Umiata so they know that there's going to be development there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garrett, my understanding is that there is known potential all along the foothills, and that this particular road would open up the opportunity to go in and actually develop some of that potential. This would be an industrial road, so it would not be an open access road, but it would help make that access to those resources more cost effective. A show of hands to see how many people actually had to buy doors.
That the community might be able to get behind.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Joel, my understanding is that they are looking at a couple of different routes. I also understand that the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation and DNR have gone to visit and talk to folks there, and so they really are, as part of the EIS process, looking at different alternatives. I'm sure those departments can give you more information on that.
I just know that, you know, for a lot of the development issues that go on the North Slope, either the borough or ASRC try to find a way to be supportive of those efforts. And with the proposed route that's being looked at, because the community was so adamantly opposed to it, that's, you know, spurred on some other questions to. You know, the company, obviously, the regional corporation there, and also the borough, and that's the basis of my question, whether they're looking at other potential routes that may be less contentious.
I understand, Mr. Chairman. I think that's very important. The public's questions about the project need to be fully addressed.
Thank you, Chair. Karen, I know last year we funded additional positions in the Department of Natural Resources to address a permitting backlog of 2,500 permits. Is this additional $3.3 million going to get rid of that entirely, or do you have a plan for what the status will be after, you know, assuming we were to get this funding?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, so the $3.3 million in the proposed budget is for their unified permitting project, because the information system is going to help them manage all of their permitting applications. The resources that you approved last year in their operating budget to help them with funded, I think it was 6 new positions, and to fund some of their existing positions that were vacant that they didn't have funding for, have really made a huge difference to the department. They've really scaled up their personal gains positions, filled and trained. They've looked at their business process to really streamline it. And my understanding is that they have reduced that backlog by about 20% at the end of the calendar year. So they really are working very hard at removing barriers, streamlining that process, and the additional resources that you provide is very helpful in doing that.
Chair, so this funding would be for the program that would allow Alaskans to be able to go online and identify exactly where their permit is in the process so that it's easier for somebody who's going through that process to identify where they are. Is that in this funding?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Costello, I don't know the specifics of what all this system will provide, but I'm certain that a web-based application in this day and age would be a component of that. The department would really be the best person to direct that to. Mr. Chair, if I could continue just on the resource development side for a moment. Also included in the governor's budget in December is continuation funding for both the Alaska Gaslight Inducement Act, the reimbursement fund at $60 million, and also the Alaska Gaslight Development Corporation project at $21 million. It's the same level of funding that they have in the current year. We know there is going to be considerable discussion about gaslight development and where those two projects are headed, and we will make adjustments in the budget as necessary as those discussions continue through the session. So I just wanted to make sure you were aware of that.
In the couple of lines up here, we were talking about roads and resources. And I believe you said there would be $4 million, a bit more than $4 million for the road between Stangway and Whitehorse. Did I hear that correctly?
Mr. Chairman, we're saying to that $4.5 million, a portion of that, and about $2.5 million is for the road between Stangway and Yukon. The other $2 million would be for resource roads, smaller resource roads that are not specifically identified. Mr. Chairman, those would be roads like, for example, a small road into a general state forest land tower road or an example like that is not for roads in Canada.
Those roads and resources in Canadian territory, are those subject to the Shackwreck agreement provisions?
Mr. Chairman, Co-Chair Stoltz, as I understand it, the $2.5 million for the Klondike Highway would be on the Alaskan side of the road. Yes.
That is the Shackwreck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I continue on to education. Slide number 8. Our budget includes full funding and forward funding for our K-12 education and people transportation programs. So that would be about approximately $1.17 million for FY13 and then the forward funding for FY14. It is based on the current statutory based student allocation, which is $5,680 per average daily membership. The budget also includes a request for $8 million for the Alaska Performance Scholarships. As you know, the class of 2011 was the first class to be eligible for Alaska Performance Scholarships. Over 2,400 students qualified, and of those students who qualified, over 900 of them actually received the scholarship and are going to school. The remaining students, of course, would be eligible for that scholarship over the next 5 years. The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education is preparing a report to the legislature that's due to you on the 10th day, so I think that would be the 27th of next week, that will provide you with detailed information on the Alaska Performance Scholarship, the students who qualify, and as much information as they can put together on this first inaugural class. So that should be a very interesting program. Also, the budget includes two school construction projects. You may recall that earlier last fall, the administration settled the long-standing Casselli settlement with budget support funding for the 5 highest priority rural school construction projects over the next few years. And the first two of those projects are in Monick and Kalyanik. and those two are before you in the measure request. We've also included about $24 million for the first 14 projects on the Department of Education's priority list for major maintenance.
Thank you, Rev. Thomas. On school construction, could you tell me how many students those schools have in them, and then how large you will make them? One of the concerns I've heard from some of the rural districts is the schools are so big, they have a low enrollment because they have the heat gain kind of building. So, do you have that information?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, I don't have that information in front of me. So, I believe that Atlantic, though, it currently is significantly over capacity. Department of Education will get that information for you, and I know it's available on their web as well, but we'll get that information for you, the number of students and the size of the facility.
Follow-up, sir? And I guess the part of the question is more concerned on how you're going to determine how large you're going to make the school so that it maybe decreases versus increases, how the BSA and all that takes care of those energy needs for a larger school.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, what I can tell you is that the Department of Education's ranking of projects places those that have the most unhoused students higher on the list. So for the most part, schools that really have are significantly over capacity for the size of the building will be higher at the list, in addition to health, safety, and conditions of the buildings.
Thank you.
Representative Garrett. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Karen, I think my biggest concern that I've seen in the budget so far is the funding of education. 2 years ago, it was $5,680 per student. Last year, was that amount that we had some off-budget funding or off-base student allocation funding? And then proposed for next year, again, it's $5,680. So for the same level of education funding that 2 years ago, with inflation wasn't cut, the community of Juneau has announced that they have to lay off somewhere around 60 people under this budget proposal, and we're going to hear similar stories across the state of layoffs. And so what is the governor's logic behind leaving funding at the same level it was 2 years ago?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garrett, and I think we'll see it a little bit further in the presentation, but one of the governor's main concerns about formula funding is that is one of the bigger drivers in our budget, and once you make a change to a formula program, those automatic increases will occur as we're continuing to see declining in oil production. So what he's been focusing on, of course, is performance scholarship, because that's going to help improve the academic rigor and hopefully the success of our students. At the same time, he's not necessarily opposed to some of the targeted funding. This past year, the legislature did include some funding for energy outside of the formula. But I think his main concern is really looking at the growth of formula programs over time and how we can to sustain that. So I know we'll have a lot more discussion about education funding this session. We do know over the three-year education funding program that was in place, significant increases occurred in support for our intensive students and also for the BSA. This actually, FY13 is the last year of the implementation of the district cost factor, so that's included in these numbers before you. So I know that we'll have a lot more discussion about it, but that's what I can tell you today.
But with flat funding, if this legislature were to come up with a proposal to avoid the layoffs that we've heard from school districts will result from flat funding, do you know if the governor's going to have an opposition to that? Or do you not know?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Durack, I wouldn't be able to speculate on it at this time.
Thank you.
Also, if you have Karen, as analysts, you'll be coming up with the contribution that we made for terms at 22% outside the formula. I mean, when we looked at it in financing and then you get the subcommittee level, it's huge. And I think if they were to count that somehow into the student base allocation and unfortunately. So that continues to grow a little bit. But the rates of the teacher salaries that I'm negotiating. So that's good. Make sure that you have that in the future. I know the finance subcommittee chairman will be keeping that out. So that is for my committee to not be the vote. I mean, you make the retirement payment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, that's a very important piece. It is. Mr. Chairman, the next slide has to do with public safety. As you know, Governor Cornell has been committed to eliminating domestic violence and sexual assault in Alaska, and he's been very focused on his initiative called Choose Respect. This will be the third year of the request in front of you. Sure, requesting just under $12 million for this particular initiative under three broad categories. Prevention and intervention, requesting $3.3 million. This includes public education and outreach, community-level prevention projects, and rural pilot projects. You may know that in this past calendar year, we had 64 communities participate in Choose Respect activities. We're targeting 100 in this calendar year. And we think that sends a very strong message about supporting victims and survivors, but also that it's just unacceptable. So we also include $3.2 million for support for survivors, including shelter services, services for children exposed to violence, trauma, services for victims, and also for housing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome.
Thank you. Not necessarily for today, but if I could get a follow-up on the revenues that we provided for prevention. I'm a little concerned that prevention is being tied together with intervention. Primary prevention has been certainly my focus in trying to make sure the dollars went for prevention versus intervention, which is absolutely important and needs that funding also. But under the Public Safety Department, under Corrections, under Department of Law, and under CESA, we provided prevention money under the governor's budget last year. I'd like to know if you have funds that won't be expended in 2012 and if those are going to roll back into the general fund, or whether we'll be able to expand the money that was allocated for all of the departments last year.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, Representative Fairclough, we can get you that information.
Yes, we're spending it in FY 12 this budget.
Mr. Chairman, and then finally, under the Choose Respect Initiative, law enforcement includes $5.3 million to continue to provide law enforcement presence in communities who requested. The budget would provide for an additional 15 VPSOs and one support trooper, housing for VPSOs, 6 offender management and supervision, a cold case prosecutor, and assistance to limited English proficient victims to help with their services. We also, as you know, the governor has been very committed to improving and preparing our ability to respond in the case of a disaster. In this current year budget, the legislature approved just under $5 million to help with emergency power generation and water purification. This request would provide emergency food supplies in several locations throughout the state, again, in conjunction with helping to prepare our communities in the case of a disaster to be able to provide emergency services. Also, we're requesting an interior search and rescue helicopter. As you know, the weather conditions and geography in interior Alaska can provide enormous challenges to being able to provide quick response to emergencies, and it's really critical that the state troopers have the equipment necessary to be successful and make that happen. So we're looking for your support for the request.
I'm a law service organization, and one of those big counties is a lot of disaster preparedness. I know I asked them to do yet, but 28K and a generator and a lot of supplies and stuff at the American Legion, which is really a way for government. It's looking forward to Mr. Cadkis is here in general practice to talk about how we can interface with folks that know how to do it, because when government
doesn't seem to take all the zeros to it, but build upon the successes. I have a small community, a little bigger in general, but it's still hometown small. That's the way we do things. We don't always look at government as the first source of a lot of things. That's one of the things I just know. If we would put that out to everybody, the 30,000 we spent, it was a big organized design study or plan, I think. And I think there's I think people live on their equals. How can we get the things we do well on them? And we're talking about efficiency. When we get to it, we're talking about 7% declines. There are people that are very happy that the pipeline went $150,000, $150,000 theoretically, but I guess you can sell a barrel of oil for $300 and it probably works out. That said, the slow things and departments are building, that's one where I've had people already come up to me that are very interested in the governor's initiatives and they want to know how they can save, do it more efficiently.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Stoltz, I think that General Backus would be very, very willing and interested in talking with you about that. I know that his folks in emergency management are providing training and working with all kinds of organizations to help be prepared, and I think we've really seen some benefit from that.
Could you give me some kind of statistics on how many times the interiors, a helicopter would have or could have been used in the interior, maybe in the last couple of years, to get a kind of see how much it would be used? And then would somebody be billed if that had been, or would that be at the state's cost? What exactly are you thinking as far as how that would be handled?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, I know the Department of Public Safety has a real good briefing paper on this project, and we'll get that for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for another meeting, but my office has set phone calls on the emergency food supply $4.9 million expenditure. And I know that there's been a lot of good planning going on, but Mr. Chairman, it would be beneficial, at least for me, I'm happy to take it offline from committee, but to understand all of the ways that we have researched this particular amount of money, who we want to partner with, so that we can replenish that supply, knowing that there will be some ongoing expense, but how do we mitigate some of that? Can we reach agreements with other states that might have emergencies and they might purchase that food supply from us so that we can keep moving or keeping our food supply fresh and just the different things that have went into this particular request. So if not full finance, Mr. Chairman, I certainly will take it offline and ask for additional information. I have many people in my community, as Representative Stoltz has said, that are concerned about emergency response and concerned about operations, and we do have quite a bit of planning done in both our small hometown as well as the greater area. So I'd like to see who we're coordinating with.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rickock, I'm certain that emergency management folks would love to come in and do a presentation for the committee if you desire to do that.
Yeah, I'll just make a comment. 44 years ago, when I was in foreign country, we had sea rations that were made in the Korean conflict. People were happy then. So, if there was sea rations, I think now they dehydrated, so we just add water. But that was as fresh as it came sometimes. So, Mr. Chairman, I would hate for those, maybe the current sea rations to have been made in China, especially if we have the resources in Alaska, like fish and other things. I would much rather stimulate our own economy by utilizing our own resources, and I would hope that I'm sure we may bottle water here, that we turn this around and support our own industries.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'll turn to transportation infrastructure. Build and maintain Alaska's infrastructure. We've included over $1 billion for statewide infrastructure projects.
This includes a number of highway and aviation projects through our federal highways and also for state funding projects. We have municipal water and sewer projects, about $39 million of that. That's general funds, but it also leverages local dollars for those professional 16 projects. We have really safe water in about $51 million of the $8.7 million of state general fund match for that. Municipal Harbor Grant funds 10 projects and $23 million. As I mentioned earlier, the governor has also introduced a port geo-bond package that includes six projects totaling $350 million. The Port of Anchorage, of course, is in there for $200 million. The Point Mackenzie Rail Extension Project, $110 million. And $10 million each for improvements towards the Bristol Bay Borough, at Atlantic, and Super for the relocation of the CDQ group, and also in Ketchikan, Ward Cove. I suspect we will have a lot more discussion about that particular package. On the energy front,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Especially the port portion came up, and I was kind of interested. You know, out on the horizon, well, actually, really close, not that far out on the horizon, is offshore development. There's a whole bunch of stuff that we've been able to see, I think, in the work that we've been doing with the Northern Waters Task Force. And one of the things that, whether it's marine transportation, what's going on with the end up at Nome, all of that, I was a little disappointed that I didn't see anything in there, considering that the Coast Guard is recommending and has been recommending for some time that we figure out how to do some forward basing. That the Coast Guard is good and others got no place that the base of in western or northern Alaska, that we didn't initiate something in this package, and maybe that's left up to the legislature to do it. And we're certainly be glad to be engaged in that discussion in the next 90 days. But I was glad to see something out there. I understood it was there primarily to get the Anchorage port jump started, and then attach a few other things on to that. But it's a real opportunity, I believe, to deliver a message to Congress to say we're looking at this, we're serious, and we're willing to put some of our own money, because we've heard that obviously we've seen that they're just not willing to do this because their money's tied up elsewhere and they're worried about other things. But to see us engaged in that, I just thought I'd throw that out there so that as the discussions move on between now and finalizing the budgets, that maybe we can get somewhere.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jewell, I do know that there's a couple things in the current year budget. We had some funds in for our report study with the Corps that morphed a little bit into the mapping funding that was approved by the legislature this year. And then in the FY13 budget, we have additional funding requested for our report with the U.S. Corps. So we're continuing to try to move forward on the Army Corps part, and we know that there's, of course, a lot more that needs to happen in that arena. So I appreciate your comments. But we are continuing to try to move right towards that.
Representative Austin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to insert myself into the committee. During the municipal water and sewer $32 million, is that just to match federal dollars, or is there more money within the $32 million to kind of work down on that long list of municipal water and sewer projects out there, particularly in third world conditions we're living in some of our areas?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Austin, the $32 million on the slide is for the municipal water and sewer program. So when you look at DEC has their list of projects, we've gone down those. I think 16 projects are included in that $32 million number. We can confirm that. But that matches local funds. The Village Safe Water Program, which is the thing that Bill is referring to, is also in the governor's budget. It's about a $50 million program. There is about 8.7 of that is general fund match for the federal funds that come in for Village Safe Water projects. And they're broken into a couple of pieces for first-time projects and then for repair and upgrades to existing Village Safe Water projects. So those are in there as well. The general fund, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, the general fund is 8.7. The total project is about $50 million because there's still funds that come in for that.
I don't have really have any money in the sewer system in my district, but most of them aren't, so I'm going to a dozen people.
Mr. Chairman, should I continue?
Yes.
On energy, there are several pieces in the governor's budget for energy. One is the round 5 for renewable energy is in at $25 million. We included weatherization and home energy rebates at a little over $50 million, and $20 million of that goes to the home energy program, and the $30 million is in the weatherization program.
And the question on the renewable energy grant system is the COF parent level. And the like we keep saying we wanted $50 million a year, and we have to keep fighting for $50 million. Why did the bill say $50 million a year, so why doesn't the government keep bringing
Mr. Chairman, what we've been really looking at and trying to work with AEA on is the projects that are already in the hopper and which of those projects can we really move forward on towards completion that will then help reduce the cost of energy to the consumers. What are the projects that are coming through their evaluation projects process annually that need to move forward because not all of them do need to move forward, and then some of them that we did fund, they're not going to pursue. So what we're trying to do by not including the full amount at any given time is really be able to go back and have the discussion about what's in the list, what's in the hopper, which ones really should we be investing in now that would make the biggest difference for reducing power costs in the community. So we're working with them on that, and I know they'll be
Brazil, the committee is to watch very carefully. And just to beat the hammer, I think we're, the projects that we've built so far in a few years has been in existence and saved 10 million gallons of diesel during the super energy items we built. So it's working. Some places in taking energy costs from 85 million just saves to like 22 or 23 cents a kilowatt. No, it is not a belief that they have to pay 85 cents a kilowatt for electricity, but it is working, and we are fighting. We are authorizing the bill again this year because this one expires, I believe, next year. So,
2013, right? 2013 is the last year, Mr. Trump.
Yeah. I'm just going to beat my girl. Raven.
I want to be a
I
was just trying to think of any Jewish instruments you want to play, but I can't think of any. Klezmer. Karen, I'm just following up on Representative Thomas's question. I lost on this one. The first year we had the Renewable Energy Fund that Representative Thomas and others worked so hard on, they got $50 million in it. There was some evidence that we had more than that in a need, and I worked with Representative Huffman's office, and we added another $50 million that year during special session. But then with 2 years of vetoes by the governor, it's just gotten rid of that extra $50 million. So that's one. I guess I'm pretty unhappy about that, I'll say. We have fewer projects, I think, out there that communities need than we would. But your answer that we're only funding the projects that seem viable at this time, I mean, it seems to me that if that were the case, then the number wouldn't be this magic flat $25 million. Because it would be a different number every year. It can't magically be 20, every year $25 million is exactly what people have come forward with that's viable. So, do I have a right to be skeptical about that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kerry, I think part of the issue is one of timing also, because we will get from ADA very soon. I'm trying to get rid of their deadline, but round five isn't completed by the time we put our budget forward. So they do their evaluation of round five, and the applications that they received, and maybe not all of them are going to be recommended for funding. The legislature will get a list here, and is it in the first 15, within the first 15 days of session, I've forgotten now, but you will get a list of the projects that were evaluated in round five and what the dollar amount for those are. And what AEA has done is they'll put the list together, and then if the governor's budget has $25 million, they'll show you how far you would get on the list of projects that were evaluated and approved through round five and how much more would be needed if you were going to fund the entire list. So some of it is timing because you don't really know the projects that will come through that process. But I think what I was trying to say in my earlier answer, and apparently I didn't do a very good job of it, was trying to think about, we know that there have been, this is the fifth round, that a number of projects have been funded. And some of those that were funded earlier, if they really are ones that will make a big difference in the community and reduce costs, should we be going back around and investing specifically in those projects? And we're not necessarily doing that through the renewable energy grant, but doing it through a combination of a renewable energy grant and a legislative grant or governor's grant. So there's just a number of things that we're trying to look at. The renewable energy grant in itself is a piece of that bigger picture. So.
I want to add, your general issues are, we don't try to fund Chinese operations title, and we try to concentrate on one line of improvement, renewable energy projects versus some new idea that somebody has from Sunny California, we have something that'll work in any Kodiak, Zikowski, wind energy, and how you're doing Chris Davis and some other places. Cordova. So, I like the word that you had, I think it was fireball or something, but we know that it'll work. We want to go out there and get fun, so that you do it energy research. But I'm going to try to build projects that will work, and we know that will work. We'll wait till the Swedes or somebody else get genetic energy working right, instead of shaking on all the time. So, Representative Castell.
Through the chair. Karen, this may seem like an obvious question, but is it possible to change the process so that the timing coincides with the introduction of the governor's budget, considering how important this program is for Alaskans?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Costello, I think it's always possible to make adjustments, and perhaps when the program, I know the co-chair has a bill in to extend that and perhaps through that and some of the work with the EA that could change.
Mr. Chair. I can confirm, I can find building is a good standard, and I think we want to have another standpoint, which is create the science and technology fund, you can have the clever with the ideas program instead of the alternative energy program.
That was my point. You get more artful than this. I wasn't using that word. So,
I'm looking forward to the debate. This year is just running around the edges. It's interesting session for yesterday because we had a big group out of work. A few projects totaling $2 million that didn't fit any of these funding mechanisms. So I'm appreciative of how the numbers out there. I expect that they will get adjusted as time goes on, but I also know as well that we would probably consider more funding for projects that fall inside of the renewable energy grant funded. But
bulk power, bulk fuel, rural power system upgrades. The comment I wanted to make was that I appreciate that I saw this there, the governor adding in additional funds for the local competing energy assistance program, LIHEAP, because I think if there's a program that's critical here and now, and it's not just for rural housing, it's also for more than half the 22,000 recipients come from South Central. That is a critical piece of this whole puzzle right here as well. Thank you.
Okay, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hesitate to even get involved in this subject because, as I recall, I took a bad beating in both the financing of it the first time and how that money was spent. I hesitate to get involved in this, but I'd actually like to know if there is any independent auditing of these projects being done, that is to say, whether anybody outside the Energy Authority is keeping an eye on what's happening here, and whether these projects are working, or if they need more money than they can get through the current system, or anything like that. So,
Mr. Chairman, Representative, this may not be the answer to your question, but I do know that I had to receive state funds. It's subject to some audit requirements, so they would have an auditor coming in and looking at their books and their expenditures specific to the project itself. I don't know that I can answer that question. I'd have to defer that to AEA.
Thank you, AEA. I know that you're going to sustain one of the requirements for a state agency. They have more experts on them than you can believe. People who think they can pull a project off. That's not processes of meaning. That's a whole line of things you have to get done before you get the money from them. You're not number one line. So I think it's very well guarded.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious to know whether or not, things like ethanol project is better than there were audits to find out. It was an audit to find out. That was sort of been done in.
Okay. Mr. Chair, thank you. I don't want to make a big thing of this, and I think none of us like to have our positions misstated, but I also agree with the concept that the project should be viable and smart, so I'm not sure what I would have said to give a different impression, but apparently I may have, so
thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm just to quickly perhaps wrap up this slide, but also power cost equalization is included in the budget estimated at $38.2 million. On deferred maintenance, this would be year three of the deferred maintenance package. What I can tell you is that we know there's about 2,200 facilities statewide, about 17 million square feet of space with an estimated replacement value of about $7.8 billion. We know, as a result of the work that's been done over the first 2 years, is that we're getting more consistent in our definition of deferred maintenance, although we still have work to do on that. But we have a better identification of the universe of deferred maintenance projects. We actually have facilities managers getting together on a regular basis, sharing information, looking at how they're managing their student assets, and it's been doing a remarkable job of bringing together what hasn't been addressed for some time. We are looking at, there are some facility condition index standards that we can apply to help us measure how well we're doing. And at the end of this year, all of the year one money will be expended, fully expended. Year two money is in the hopper. And your three money is in the request before you. So it's been a very, I think, successful way because it helps our agencies actually plan and complete some of these projects without the ebb and flow of not knowing if you're going to get funding to start something. So it's really been extraordinarily helpful. There's a lot to do, so thank you. And on the primary for military support, of course, we continue to put money towards our Army and Air Guard facilities, the veteran services and outreach efforts. We are also working on our interior veteran cemeteries, so you'll see in the capital budget to money and federal authorization, and a portion of the operating costs will show up in the operating budget in FY14 and some of the full amount of the request there. Alaska Aerospace Corporation, that discussion, we have included $8 million in the operating budget for the Alaska Aerospace Corporation. As you know, they have their funding stream from missile defense has changed dramatically. They're working very hard on securing additional customers for the launch complex in Kodiak and actually looking at mid-sized rockets. They have a couple of companies who are very interested in doing their launches from Kodiak. So we have included the funding in the budget to keep their organization viable and to be able to secure these additional customers. So, John, the next slide, I'm not sure how long you wanted to go today. I'm probably going to do a much quicker review of the pie chart than I would otherwise. I think you guys have a good idea what's in here, but I just will quickly do this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, it doesn't have to be today, but I think it'd be remiss if I had passed back on slide 11, Aerospace Corporation. My understanding is we did not get the contracts that we were bidding on, and so I'm wondering how long we will need to invest to keep the facility operational. And where we're seeking those midterm customers and when we might know whether we can actually secure contracts. I understand we just lost around.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Faircloth, they were competing for the bid out of Fort Greeley, and they were not successful there. They do have another, speak to that here, but I know they do have another vendor who is very interested in the Kodiak launch site. We expected to have some decisions and commitments prior to December, so I know their timing is very limited, but hopefully we will have some commitments from them, and if we do, we can bring that forward in our amended budget, which is due to you on the 30th day.
That's true, I might. I support the facility. I just know that they are in a global competition for attracting resources to the state of Alaska, and I know that they need the state support behind them. There are many people in that community that depend as a livelihood on that facility being successful, but as we move down the road, just understanding what our opportunities are and what that investment looks like would be helpful.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, because I started on that board, I think there should be some clarity because Representative Burkhoff has asked the question. The Fort Greeley bid was a missile defense contract that the federal government does in managing the Fort Greeley complex, and it's done by Boeing and Aerospace, lived together with Lockheed Martin. Try to overall bid that contract and take it. They lost that. And they were hoping that overall scope of the Alaska aerospace business in Alaska would be enhanced by that contract. So, although it would have helped support the Lockheed facility as the overall corporation in the shape. They are in negotiations with two other companies, so I'm stepping Lockheed Martin to launch mid size rockets. Currently, their facility only launches smaller satellites. And so, this is a 1-year shot to keep them alive for 1 year until they can come up with something. If they were to get a contract to do a mid size launch, there's a $125 million complex that they have to add to their current facility to become able to launch these mid sizes. There's a whole other discussion that we'll get into if they can find the customers to do that. And I've spoken to the governor about it already. I know the governor's talked to the aerospace, and he doesn't agree with building a complex that they will come if they build it. The aerospace does have contracts in place before the last legislation where the government would move forward in looking at the $125 million figure out with any of that expansion of facilities. This is a one-year, it may take 2 years to contract. If they get the contract, then obviously build the facility will be a two-year, at least a two-year process to get into that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems like there may be opportunities specifically for a U.S. market with the decreased federal funding going towards space exploration. So I do think there's opportunity, and I certainly support the governor moving forward. We need to make sure that we have the robust discussion about what it means if we're searching or looking for mid-sized missile contracts, what that will mean for capital investment, again, trying to diversify our economy, but what that looks like in an all-in number.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll try to do the pie chart discussion pretty quickly, because I think we've already talked about several of these pieces. But as you look at the pie chart, again, this is our total request of a $12 million budget. If you look at the left-hand side of the pie chart, really represents those areas of the budget that are generally considered non-discretionary formula programs that are affected in our statewide operations and requirements. The right-hand side of the chart would be more discretionary. It's the agency non-formula components of the operating budget and the capital budget. And those kind of ebb and flow depending on decisions that we make. The highlighted area, the blue checkered area on the right, is the general fund component of the operating formula. And the reason I break that out is when we're working with state agencies and we're looking really closely at their general fund requests, that slice of the pie basically represents that number. I'll just highlight on the left, starting with the K-12, we've talked about that. What's in those numbers? I did mention that it's the fifth year of implementation of district cost factors, so that's, it's in that number. Under other formula, that includes Medicaid. Our big Medicaid numbers, about $1.61 billion of that is Medicaid, the total $1.96. Other pieces included in that other formula would be public assistance, higher costs, equalization, shared taxes, those components of our budget. Statewide appropriations represent just about 12% of our budget, $1.44 billion. And in statewide appropriations is the retirement system direct deposit, which this year is $610 million. That's up from our $479 million request in the current year. I know that we will have a lot more discussion about what options or opportunities there may be to try to address the unfunded liability in the longer term. You know that at this point it's about $11 billion, $7 billion of that attributed to the public employees retirement system and $4 billion to teachers retirement system. So that's a huge component of the statewide appropriations. Also, this is where the $400 million is budgeted for the tax credits, or expiration tax credits. Our debt service number of $301 million is in this particular size of the pie. This is down a little bit this year, large part due to the work of this committee last year to buy down some debt, so that brought our costs down. State revenue sharing, $60 million to replenish the annual community revenue sharing payments that are distributed to 162 incorporated and 150 unincorporated communities annually. Then the permanent fund component, $1.48 billion, is about 12% of the budget, and this is our PFD and our hold harmless appropriations. The capital budget at $1.8 billion, just under 15% of the total request in front of you. I've already talked about several of the items in there, the transportation infrastructure, roads to resources, energy, deferred maintenance, public safety. So I'm not going to go back through those again. But generally, I think you're all familiar with these components of the pie.
So, here's the chairman. Is the $1.8 billion capital budget, what component of that is federal funds?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, I'm just going to look quickly at my business summary. The out of $1.8 billion in the capital budget, $829 is federal authorization.
So, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, so that's $1 billion. But we would talk about the capital budget, scheme of this capital budget, there'd be, there's $1 billion capital budget built into the governor's request already.
Mr. Chairman, the unrestricted general fund number in the governor's request is $882 million. That includes the $60 million issue reimbursement amount, which is not technically a capital project, but it's a reimbursement for capital expenditures.
Okay, I'm sure it's true that I can't put the numbers out, probably just because I'm not very good at math. But if that's the discretionary capital, and the amount that you said before was the federal funds, what's left in there?
Mr. Chairman, there are designated general funds in this particular budget of about $81 million, and then $20 million in other funds for the total capital budget of $1.8
billion. So, if I might, Mr. Chairman, I'll just stop this in just a second. So, there's basically $1 billion in what we will think of as state funds being paid, and the other $800 million is federal funds. Is that the right way to think about it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's correct.
I think about any number of capital projects that we've built, either proposed or passed, and I'm wondering, is there a way to see, once we expend the money, to see whether or not having built that infrastructure, it comes back later in the form of that being included in the operating budget for operations and maintenance?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jewell, we do see that, for example, when we added the new life science building for the university. Yes, you will see those come back in the operating and budget. And generally, if we're building a state facility, as the department comes before you and talks about their request, they should be reflecting what those ongoing operating costs would look like.
The three things that came to immediately to mind. One was the life science building. The other is the lab grant. And that's still, well, very still out on that one. But we have some projection. I don't know if I intended for any of you. But the other thing is, you know, we see the request for schools, so you get built through your grant, and it doesn't go back directly to the state as an operating budget issue, but it comes back to the district, which gets their money in. And so more money comes probably out of the classroom, maybe, and into an operating budget. I'm just wondering if there's a way to see how that works.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Joel, on the Department of Education and Projects, you know, typically the major maintenance projects and some of those that we do fund pretty regularly on an annual basis. And some of those projects are going to actually result in some savings because they're going to provide for some efficiencies and improvements to the facility itself. New construction and new buildings, depending on what the disposition is of the old school, may also either help their water line or contribute to increasing it. I think the Department of Education would be in a position to talk to you about some of those buildings or a replacement school or is that an additional school.
Right.
Mr. Chair, we're going to go to the next slide, which is just a highlight of the operating budget. So we've talked generally about some of these things, but I did want to highlight for you that in the governor's budget, we did delete 288 positions. These are full-time and part-time positions. They were long-term, vacant. For the most part, they had been vacant for over 11 months. We identified those positions and requested that the departments leave them if there was a specific position that they preferred to swap for that. We allowed that to happen. It was a pretty arduous process to do this. The result, I think, is that you should see, first of all, your personal services lines in a lot better shape. We were trying to make sure that we didn't have anything that exceeded our reasonable vacancy factor to try to address some of these areas or so we don't have the money to fill the positions or not getting our work done. We also asked departments to look carefully at the funding sources that they had in their personal services and delete those or move it, or if they're not actually receiving those receipts, let's get that personal services line as clean as we can. We also, as you know, because the last couple of years we've had language in the budget, we're providing you every 6 months a report on transfers in and out of personal services. So we're all looking really carefully to make sure that when we're budgeting for personal services, we know what's in those numbers and what we can afford in terms of hiring and filling positions. So I think the end result is it's going to be a very good thing for us, but it wasn't without some significant effort on the part of all our departments to get there.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question that is semi-related to this conversation, but it affects the state in a big way on a previous conversation with our PERS and TERS pension liabilities. As municipalities and organizations across the state start to look at their vacancy factors, as the state is doing right now, and they reduce the number of pensions, will that somehow change the formula that they're using to pay down their pension liabilities when they look at less positions as far as contributing towards that pension liability deficit? In other words, will there be cost shifting from local communities that will reduce the number of positions that they have towards the payment that they would make if instead of your 22% so that the state is actually picking up more of that pension liability? Given a question for a different time, but directly related, that if we're saying the state and have gone through reducing numbers, will we have a negative effect come back to us in a different way, or have we taken that into consideration as we move forward?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fairclough, yes, that we've had conversations about that, and also with municipalities who are looking to reduce the workforce, what the impact of that is, along with the whole issue of termination studies. So, but I know that you will be talking more about that.
Because I forgot it, what is the total PERS TERS liability at this point, and then what is the governor proposing as an appropriation to fund towards it?
The unfunded liability at the moment is $11 million, and the governor's budget for FY13 includes a $610 million direct deposit into the unfunded liability. A couple other highlights on the operating budget. Medicaid, I mentioned briefly, our budget for FY13 is an increase of $130.5 million. $45 million of that is general fund. It's approximately an 8.6% increase. Department of Health and Social Services is projecting about 150 Alaskans enrolling in FY13. As I talked about earlier, the enrollment, utilization, and cost are really the drivers. So depending on how many enroll and how many actually utilize services will dictate the cost. We are proposing opening of Goose Creek in the FY13 budget. The department has a plan in place to open the facility over the four quarters in FY13 and into one quarter in FY14. By the end of that, we'll have the prisoners from our out-of-state contract, back in Alaska, and the facility fully up and operational. The money that is being used currently for out-of-state contracts that will help fund the operations of Goose Creek. So you'll see that, and there will be a lot of discussions about Goose Creek, but the facility is ready to go, and we're building it into the request in front of you. Tourism marketing, we have that in for $16 million through the Department of Commerce, and the budget also includes salary and benefit increases, totaling about $66 million for the executive, legislative, university, and board system. This slide, Mr. Chairman, I think this highlights really how important the state budget is to all Alaskans and why we spend so much time on it. If you look at the large portion of the pie, 60% of the budget benefits Alaskans and communities, organizations, individuals through grants, direct payments, and capital spending. This is everything from Medicaid to our permanent fund dividend, to revenue sharing, school funding, retirement system unfunded liability, capital projects, and intercipient grants. 21% of the budget is for purchase services, travel, hotels, professional services, fuel, equipment. Some of this is internal to state agencies, but a lot of this is purchased directly from Alaskan businesses from our private sector. And then 19% of the total represents the state employee salary costs for those employees who are tasked to deliver our services to lessons. So I think it's a very important discussion that we have and the work that we do. So to wrap up, Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned, a lot of people worked diligently on this budget to bring it to you. We started in July, we released it in December, and I really have to say I appreciate the work of departments because it's really not easy. All the commissioners, our staff, it's an incredible amount of work. I want to thank Ledge Finance for the review that they do of the governor's budget. We all benefit from their expertise and their experience, and I know we'll be talking about some of the things that Mr. Teal has highlighted in his overview, and I know he'll be referring to tomorrow. And then I want to thank you in advance because I know for your subcommittees, you and your staff are going to spend a lot of time on this, and we're happy to help you in any way possible can. So thank you, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you. And we will be talking about, as we go forward here tomorrow, as you put it, David Teal will be here. He's the director of Lux Finance, who will be going over our comments and his comments about the governor's budget. That'll be at 1:30 tomorrow, Thursday here on Fridays. And just for your info, we won't be meeting on Friday if anybody has monthly plans before Friday. And if the benefit of the people in the room here, yeah, we keep referring to the subcommittees and the subcommittee chairman and the list of investigative people have an interest in the order of some customer line, natural resources and commerce. Representative Benjamin has corrections and DOT, Kimberly has admin and labor, Representative Solicitor's Courts, Public Safety and Law, Representative Fairclough has the University and Revenue, Representative Wilson has Education and Military Veterans Affairs, Representative Jewell has the SMDEC, and I have Fishing Game Legislation and the Governor's Budget. So we will be scheduling meetings if we haven't already. And if you have any interest, well, then we can talk to the subcommittee chairman. We will be busy. We are adopting a new standard, and we will be training on Saturday to try to refine that a little bit more and more. And I think that's going to work because of the enthusiasm that we have. So, unless there's comments from our members, Representative Kocher.
Thank you, Mr. Rayfield, for keeping this interesting and informative. You have to say the best stuff that Governor Hyde said, how we help back the good stuff. And if I might, should the say for about 20 seconds, that Governor Kocher from 21 years ago, May of 1990, I look pretty much the same except for dinner, but my hair's messed up, and I'm wearing a Alaskan grown shirt. Your dad has the same smile, face, and blackness. I love John Hewitt, and we're going to do this picture.
former of the team owner, Representative Rick Boucher. Is that common?
Okay, with nothing else, we'll be here tomorrow at 1:30. Ready to go.